Welcome to Missionary Talks, where we talk with missionaries and learn about their lives and work.
William Carey was born in 1761 as the oldest child to Edmund and Elizabeth Carey of Northamptonshire, England. Today, he is known as the father of modern missions, but his humble upbringing to a poor weaver family is how this well-known missionary got his start. His father took the position of church clerk, which included the responsibility of being the schoolmaster, and therefore young William was able to attend school from the ages of 6 to 12. However, this was the extent of what was available to him for schooling. The rest of his learning would come from what he could gain on his own through any books he could find and experiences he had. He was blessed to have many books available to him. By the time he was 16, he had already taught himself Latin, and a friend had taught him how to read and write Greek. This love of languages shaped young William Carey into the missionary he was to later become. After he finished school at the age of 12, he was apprenticed to a shoemaker. Though his mom and dad were both weavers by trade, his dad understood that there would be a time when machines would do much of the weaving work. The spinning jenny and Isaac Watt's steam engine were invented during young Carey's life, and Mr. Carey knew that these advancements would lessen the need for weavers. When William was 14, he entered into a 7-year apprenticeship with Clark Nichols. Another apprentice with Mr. Nichols was John Warr. John was a couple of years older than William and a member of a dissenter church, or nonconformist church, which included Baptist, Congregational, Presbyterian, and Quaker churches. While attending a prayer meeting with Warr one night, Carey decided that he belonged in a Baptist church. This was not a quick decision, though. He and Warr debated many doctrinal beliefs before William made the decision. As a nonconformist, one was not allowed to be a paid officer of the state nor hold rank in the military. Often, they were denied entrance to schools. The shoemaker they worked under died in 1779. By this time, John Warr had finished his apprenticeship, but Carey was left without a master and 2 years still to finish on his training. When he found a new master, he also found his future wife. Dorothy Plackett, or Dolly as she was called, was the sister to his master's wife. William and Dolly were married in 1781 while still in his apprenticeship. Therefore, they had no money to support a family when within a year their first daughter, Anne, was born. Carey became a part-time dissenter preacher and was occasionally asked to preach in his hometown. His parents were not able to attend because of his father's position within the Church of England, but his parents supported him as much as they could. Tragically, when the baby was just 18 months old, she became sick and died. William was also ill, but was able to make a recovery. Because of his illness, though, he was not able to attend the funeral of baby Anne. His mother came to live with them for a short time to help the family with cooking and the devastating loss of their daughter. Dolly sunk into depression, a condition that she struggled with all her life. William's younger brother Tom graciously helped support the family financially during this time. Poverty worsened when William's new master also died. He had finished his apprenticeship by this time and took over his master's business. He also felt obligated to support the wife and family of his former boss, since she was his sister-in-law. She remarried a year later, releasing him from his self-imposed responsibility. He was baptized by Reverend John Ryland on October 5, 1783, who wrote in his journal, "This day baptized a poor journeyman shoemaker." Ryland did not know at the time, but the two would become lifelong friends. William took a small church as part-time pastor. His other job was as a shoemaker to help make ends meet to support his new son, Felix. He became an ordained Baptist minister on May 3, 1787, at 26 years of age. His ordination council consisted of John Sutcliffe, Andrew Fuller, and John Ryland, who had baptized him 4 years before. These three men were to remain an integral part of William Carey's life. One day, William was invited to bring up a topic for the ministers fraternal of the Northampton Association and suggested that the churches of England had a responsibility to carry the gospel to the nations of the world. This was not at all a popular view in 1787. The belief at the time was that it was the responsibility of the apostles to share the gospel. When they died, the job did too. There is a popular story in the life of William Carey which came out of this meeting, though there are questions as to its accuracy. It is said that as William was making his case for the need of churches to evangelize the heathen, that the father of his friend John Ryland stood up and said, "If God wanted the heathen to know, he would tell them himself without any help from man." Whether John Ryland Sr. said these words or not, it was obvious to those involved that this was the popular view at the time. William went away from that meeting wondering if there would ever be anything like the missionary movement he had envisioned. He had been working on a book which became known by the shortened title, Inquiry. The original title was 41 words long. When writing this book, he knew that he was fighting many years of this kind of philosophy. His shoemaker boss doubled his salary to 10 shillings a week to not work so that he could spend full time in his studies and his book. By this time, the Careys had three boys, Felix, William Jr., and Peter. Dolly was doing better as well. He finished his manuscript, but he could not afford to have it published. In 1789, they moved to a larger church for the same pay. They were blessed to have another daughter, Lucy. However, she was a constant reminder of their first baby, Anne. Sadly, Lucy too died when she was just a year and a half old. This devastated Dolly. Her younger sister, Kitty, moved in to help with the boys. William continued to improve his manuscript for Inquiry. He met Tom Potts in 1791, who paid for the publishing of his book the following year. The next time he spoke at a minister's meeting after the book was published, they seemed eager to hear him out, because many of them had read his work. He finished the next meeting with the now famous comment, "Expect great things from God, attempt great things for God." With the men who formed his ordination council 5 years previously, he started the Peculiar Baptist Society for Propagating the Gospel. The first modern-day mission board, or more commonly known at the time as a mission society, was born on October 2, 1792. There was a board, a missionary philosophy, and a group of men praying. But they had no missionary to send. Within 2 months, their prayers for a missionary was answered when they received a letter from Dr. John Thomas. Dr. Thomas had worked in Calcutta and became a Christian while he was a ship's doctor for the East India Company. He eventually left his job to work among the nationals and became a missionary within the country by default. He had contacted Carey's Missionary Society to see what kind of help they could lend one another in their efforts to evangelize the lost. Dr. Thomas was invited to meet with the Missionary Society in January of 1793. They discussed the possibility of sending him out as a missionary under their group, but before the meeting was over, he had a partner to go with him, William Carey. As they talked about sending workers into the mine shaft to mine for the precious souls, Carey announced that he would go. He looked at his friends and said, "I will go down the mine if you all hold the ropes for me." William Carey, along with Dr. Thomas, planned to leave 3 months later, in the month of March. But it would still take 5 more months after that to sail to India. As Dolly was pregnant and still very emotionally depressed, she was violently set against going to India. It was not unusual for men to leave their wives and families for several months or even years at a time to work or fight in another country. Though Carey would have preferred to have Dolly with him, he was willing to go to India without her. He did persuade Dolly to let him take 8-year-old Felix with him as a companion. Plans were made for William to go and get a mission station established and then return for his family in 3 to 4 years. His father and church did not take the news well either. Eventually, his church began to see the need and even considered it an honor to send their pastor out as the first missionary. With the short time they had available, William Carey and John Thomas set out to raise the funds necessary for the trip. They would then have to work their way through the French pirates to get out of British waters and on to India. They also had to deal with the East India Company, which did not want any teachers or missionaries in the country educating the people. They finally set sail in April of 1793 towards India. When they got to the southern side of England and ready to head out to the open seas, the captain saw the need to travel in convoy to help fight the French pirates. They waited in Portsmouth until a convoy could be arranged. In the meantime, the captain was ordered by the East India Company that if he left port with the missionaries, then he would lose his captain's license. He refused to continue the voyage with Dr. Thomas and William and Felix Carey. While waiting in Portsmouth, Carey first became aware of some of the financial problems of Dr. Thomas. These problems ended up harming the work in India for many years. Dr. Thomas took out many loans to live beyond his means. Even while owing much money, he continued to find creditors who would loan him more. While waiting for a new ship from Denmark that would take them to India, Mrs. Carey gave birth to their sixth child, Jabez. William had just enough time to return home to see the baby before the new ship set sail. During that short visit, he and Dr. Thomas were able to convince Dolly to join them on the voyage to India. Dolly's sister Kitty also joined the team. They finally set sail in June of 1793. On board, William learned as much of the Bengali language as he could from Dr. Thomas. They even started their translation of the Book of Genesis during the voyage. However, the trip did not go well for Dolly and added to her hesitation to travel to India. One of their fellow passengers got sick and died on the trip. They also encountered a storm in late August that caused 50-foot sea swells and shredded all of their sails while destroying some of their masts. They were able to make repairs, but they became very far behind schedule to be able to make it to India before the winds turned against them for the year. They did not stop to take on new supplies in Cape Town, South Africa, so that they could make up as much time as possible. This meant that the next section of the trip was made with a shortage of fresh food. They arrived in the Bay of Bengal in October, but still had to sail 200 miles to the north in unfavorable winds. It took them another month to cover this distance. They finally anchored in India on November 9, 1793. There was still the issue of getting into the country without the East India Company immediately turning them away. One of the rules said that any ship had to declare all their passengers and cargo as soon as the East India Company representative boarded them. William and his team disembarked and took a smaller craft further into India. The captain was able to declare all of their materials without having to declare the missionaries themselves. When the missionaries arrived in a small village along the river, where they had to wait for the tide, they began preaching to a crowd which gathered around them. Dr. Thomas preached for 3 hours. The villagers genuinely seemed to understand and asked intelligent questions based on what they heard. But none accepted the Lord. However, they urged the missionaries to return in the future. They were able to preach in 4 villages before they reached Calcutta. When they finally arrived in Calcutta, they were reunited with Mrs. Thomas, who had traveled back to India before them. They also were introduced to a man who formed an integral part of the missionary team, Ram Boshu. Ram became William's language teacher and eventually an evangelist for the missionary effort. William and Ram set straight to work on his language training. Within a week, William had learned enough Bengali to preach to the crowds of up to 300 people who gathered in the nearby villages to hear him. It was during this time that William began to understand the depth at which Dr. Thomas's unwise money management would affect the ministry. They were struggling financially and had to move to Calcutta after spending a couple of months in a smaller village. One of Carey's philosophies for missionary service was that the missionary would work on the field to earn the money he needed to live. But since they had not been given permission by the East India Company to even be in India, they were not able to get a job that paid well enough to sustain them. When they moved back to Calcutta, Dr. Thomas opened a private medical practice to help with the finances. William was supposed to have a job at the East India Botanical Gardens, but the job did not work out as planned, and the family moved with Ram Boshu to a less favorable part of town to be able to afford the rent. William had been given the use of some land, rent-free, where he could build a mission station and have a garden that would sustain the family. The only problem was they did not have enough money to make the journey to the new property. William went to Dr. Thomas to retrieve the money that had been set aside for the construction of a mission station. He discovered that Dr. Thomas had already spent the money and borrowed even more in the name of the Mission Society in an effort to secure a large house and 12 servants for himself. William then appealed to Reverend Brown at Fort William for help in getting the work started. When the Reverend Brown found out that William had worked with Dr. Thomas, Reverend Brown literally slammed the door in William's face. William Carey and family were starving. He had already struck out with the local bankers. Finally, Dr. Thomas appeared at the Carey home with 150 rupees he had borrowed in his own name to get the family moved to the new property. When they arrived at the new property, there was a neighboring house. In an effort to properly introduce themselves, they found a very kind and generous Charles Short, an Englishman who welcomed them to live and eat with him until they could get a place established. Mr. Short informed them that many of the locals had moved away because of a tiger infestation in the area. While William worked to build his home and compound, many of the locals returned because William was able to protect them with his rifle. This opened up new opportunity for the people to trust William and listen to his teaching. When William was on a trip during this time, he saw firsthand a religious practice that sickened him. A man was suspended from a rope with two large metal hooks jammed into his back. This was in worship to a Hindu god. William's burden for educating the people with the Bible increased. The Indian people had many sacred books that they read and followed. William knew that the translation of the Bible must be completed so that they could read about his God. Before he could get his home built, William had been offered a job as an overseer in an indigo dye factory. He was given a house and a salary 5 times greater than what he had previously ever earned. There would be 90 workers with whom he could share the gospel. The job was basically a 3-month-a-year project. The rest of the time, he would be free to work on his translations and missionary work. Toward the end of the first dye-making season, their 5-year-old son Peter got dysentery and died within a few hours. Dolly never recovered from the sadness and depression. William was starting to feel the strain and loneliness of being in India 14 months and never once hearing from the Missionary Society. Because of the French pirates, neither the Society's letters to him nor his letters to them were arriving at their destination. William began to see the need to learn Sanskrit and translate the Bible into it. The ancient Indian writings were in this language, and the educated upper caste used Sanskrit. It was the key to fully understanding the Bengali language. He could easily attract a crowd of 200 to 300 people to preach to, but he did not have a single convert. The birth of their 7th child, Jonathan, in 1796 brought joy and some relief to Dolly's depression, since Jonathan was a healthy baby. This was a joyful time for the Careys. More good news arrived in late 1796 when an Indian man sought out William to tell him that there was an Englishman looking for him. John Fountain arrived as a new recruit from the Missionary Society. By March 1797, with the help of Fountain taking over some of the factory responsibilities, William finished his initial Bengali translation of the Bible. William's boss purchased a used press for him to print the Bibles in India. With all the excitement surrounding the arrival of the press, the Indians became convinced that the press was William's idol. He took a trip to Calcutta to purchase the lead type he needed. He witnessed Sati on that trip for the first time. It is the Hindu practice where a widow would be burned alive with the body of her dead husband. This was a ritual that William spent a great number of years trying to abolish. 2 years later, in October 1799, another group of missionaries were scheduled to arrive, but they were turned back at their entry to Calcutta. They fled to a Danish settlement, Serampore. Land and houses had already been purchased for them to set up a settlement in a new indigo factory which William had purchased. Eventually, all of this was sold, and William and his team moved to Serampore to do their printing of the Bengali Bible. One of the missionaries who was with the new recruits was William Ward. He was a printer who was originally going to pay for and print the Bengali Bible back in England. But due to not being able to rely on the manuscripts actually making it home, William thought it best to print within the country of India. Now they had a press and a printer to do the necessary work. The missionaries gathered in Serampore and bought a huge house that was sufficiently large for all of them to live in. Dr. Thomas eventually left the missionary society and moved further inland to make rum. But he would occasionally visit the missionaries in Serampore. It was during one such visit that an Indian man, Krishna Paul, was injured and came to the mission house for help. Dr. Thomas was able to help the man from his injuries. Krishna Paul and a friend, Gokul, began visiting the house daily to learn from the missionaries. They both were saved a few days before Christmas, 1800. William Carey had his first converts after being on the field for 7 years. A trial of fire quickly came when these first two converts set to eat dinner with the missionaries. Because they were breaking caste, a Hindu eating with a non-Hindu, the townsmen hurled stones at them when they tried to return home. Krishna Paul's family was imprisoned, but before the ordeal was over, his wife and four daughters were saved. Gokul's wife and mother moved out. They held a baptismal service for the seven converts, but only Krishna Paul and one of the Carey boys were baptized. The others backed out for fear of the angry mob. March 5th, 1801 was a momentous day, the day in which the first Bengali New Testament came off the press in Serampore. Though it had previously been printed in parts, it was now complete. A copy was sent to the King of Denmark for his help in protecting the missionaries and keeping them in the country. Because of William's language skills, he was asked to be a teacher at a new university, Fort William College in Calcutta. William had never been to college himself, and now he was being asked to teach at one. His own education ended at the age of 12, but his knowledge of languages was the most advanced of any Englishman in India. He also knew the culture far better than men who had spent many more years in the country. He was asked to be the head of the language department. William maintained the mission station in Serampore, but traveled each week to his job in Calcutta. He would be in Calcutta Monday through Friday, while another missionary, Hannah Marshman, helped care for Dolly and the younger children. Dolly was completely mentally deranged by this time. Just 4 days after William accepted the position at the college, the British went to war against Denmark and invaded Serampore, a Danish colony. It was a peaceful takeover, but it meant that all the missionaries were now illegally in British territory. They did not have permits to be in India, but because of William's standing at the college, the missionaries were allowed to stay and carry on their missionary work. Within 6 months, the war was over and Serampore was released. By the end of that same year, the missionaries were on good terms with both the British and Danish governments. Bibles were being printed and souls were being saved. William had a good job at the school and he had become good friends with Lord Wellesley, the Governor General. After years of struggle, things had turned to the favor of the missionaries. William began to lobby the British government for the abolishment of sati, the Hindu practice of burning a widow alive with the body of her deceased husband. Lord Wellesley asked William to study the Hindu writings to see if the practice was demanded in their religion. He found that, though it was suggested, it was never required. As a result of his studies and recommendations, Wellesley outlawed infanticide, the practice of sacrificing babies to Hindu gods, but not sati. There was not enough overwhelming evidence for Lord Wellesley to outlaw it. In 1806, William had been granted the title of professor. This had not been bestowed on him before because he was not a member of the Church of England. With this title, his salary was doubled. William continued to pour any extra income he had into the ministry of translation and printing. William Jr. was ordained a Baptist minister in 1807 and moved to another area to work as a missionary. At the close of that same year, Dolly died. Though Dolly had been a physical and spiritual burden for William for so long, he still grieved at her death. He later remarried to Countess Charlotte Rumor of Denmark. She lived next to the mission station in Serampore and had taken an active interest in their ministry for several years. March 1812 saw the destruction of the print shop by a devastating fire. Many manuscripts of various language translations were lost, as well as a multilingual dictionary between Sanskrit and every Asian language. By the end of the year, news had reached England, and more than enough money had been raised to replace everything that had been destroyed. Everything that was replaceable, anyway. It took much longer to recreate the manuscripts. One of the few pictures we have of William Carey today comes from this time. He had become so well known in the churches back in England that they wanted to know what he looked like. The Mission Society finally convinced the reluctant 52-year-old to pose for a painting. Led by William Wilberforce, the man who successfully campaigned for the abolishment of slavery on British soil, the East India Company's ban on missionaries was finally lifted. Carey received the good news when his own nephew, Eustace Carey, appeared at his door presenting himself as a missionary ready for service. The new Governor General, Lloyd Mora, began requesting that William distribute new missionaries to particularly needy areas. The Governor General took personal interest in the work of the missionaries and even had recommended places for them. William's own boys were growing up and going out as missionaries to other parts of India. Felix, the oldest, shared his father's gift for languages. He translated parts of the Bible to Burmese. Felix shared some of the tragedy that his father endured as well. When a boating accident claimed the lives of his family, he took a long time to recover. In the accident, he also lost Bibles, a printing press, and the only copy of his Burmese dictionary. With the new freedom to have missionaries in the country came growing pains. Not all the missionaries arrived with an appreciation for how difficult life would be. Some bitterness and discontent settled among many of the younger workers. Changes were happening back in the Missionary Society in England as well. With the death of a couple of the mainstays back in England, the focus of leadership changed. Carey had set down as a basic premise in his book, 24 years earlier, that the missionary work should be run from the field, not from the home office, where the missionary committee could neither see nor experience the work being done. But this was exactly what the Missionary Society wanted. They had lost confidence in the ability of Carey and the older missionaries to make administrative decisions from the field. By 1815, the committee was requiring that all leadership decisions be transferred back to the authority of the sending agency. This cut to the heart of William Carey. He began to see a duplication of all his efforts just 14 miles down the road in Calcutta. He felt that the duplicated expense and effort would have served the work of God better had they been in a new area teaching new people. The missionaries became the topic of gossip among the nationals. But through all this, the government officials still highly valued William Carey and his opinions and work. Again, another new Governor General, Lord Hastings, asked for Carey's help in opening up new areas to education and Christianity. Charlotte Carey died in May of 1821. Within a short time, Krishnapal, Felix Carey, and William Ward, the printer, also died. This was a hard time for the 60-year-old Carey. He was able to establish Christian College in these later years of his life, in 1818. This was the first school recognized by the Danish government to confer degrees in Asia. Another great victory that Carey was able to see accomplished during this time was that the Governor General, Lord Bentinck, re-examined Carey's report to abolish the practice of sati and declared it illegal in all of India in 1829. He had lobbied every Governor General for 27 years to seriously consider banning the practice. As soon as he received the news, he sat down and began translating the decree into Bengali. In a short span, the mission compound and college had been washed away by flood twice. They had to completely rebuild. The financial institutions in India failed too, and the missionaries lost all their money. Not even the powerful East India Company was able to keep Fort William College up and running. With the closing of the college, the missionaries lost William Carey's income, which had been so important to sustain them. In July 1833, William Carey suffered his first of several strokes. He died quietly in his sleep in June of 1834, at the age of 72. He was buried in Serampore. Carey was not a perfect father nor husband. We probably would not agree to all his doctrinal teaching today. But his life and ministry opened many doors to the great missionary movement, which has touched the lives of millions with the gospel. As missionaries, we owe a debt of gratitude to the man who was willing to take a stand and step out to serve the Lord, even though few immediately supported and followed him. William Carey, 1761 to 1834.
You've been listening to Missionary Talks with David Peach. Please visit us at missionarytalks.com.